You're listening to the IC Interviews from Investors Chronicle. I'm Lauren Almeida, and today my guest is Walter Price, the Portfolio Manager of Allianz Technology Trust. Walter has more than four decades of experience in the industry, and since he joined the trust in 2007, its share price has risen by more than 900%. In this interview, we talk about his views on growth and regulation in tech, as well as China's move to replace the US as the leading global superpower. I thought maybe we could kick off by talking about Amazon, which is your top holding. I know it reported like kind of record profits and revenues last night. And the shares, I think, are up about 4% at the moment, which is a really sizable move for such a big company. And more people have been shopping online during lockdown, and more companies have kind of been moving to the cloud. But I think investors are kind of worried about Amazon's kind of sky-high valuation. And I guess my question is, do you think that Amazon's growth rate is kind of going to be able to keep up with its valuation?
Well, the answer from last night would be yes. You know, the growth rate, I think, was amazing for a company that large. And we'd been worried a little bit about the costs from COVID, as they call it, the $4 billion that they talked about, and the $2 billion in this coming quarter. But the incremental sales and incremental profitability from those sales more than offset those additional costs. I don't think anyone was looking for, you know, 40% revenue growth out of a company this large. So pretty amazing result, and it looks like it's sustainable. This movement toward e-commerce was underway before the crisis, and now it's even more prevalent. So I think that, Amazon's looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I wanted to ask you specifically about AWS as well, which is Amazon Web Services, their cloud computing arm. I mean, I know in this quarter gone, it did post revenue growth, but it is kind of decelerating. I mean, not unlike Microsoft's Azure. I mean, why do you think it's slowing down? I mean, cloud transformation isn't finished.
Well, I think that during this COVID situation, a lot of companies aren't working from their offices. And so it's hard to start cloud migration projects. If there was one underway, companies are probably accelerating that. But new cloud migration projects are more difficult to start and implement in this environment. So I think that some of these new projects, we've heard about some new projects that have been postponed until next year. So I think that's the reason that Microsoft and Amazon are seeing a little, and Google actually also reported a slowdown in their cloud computing business. It's not that companies don't want to move, and I would expect those numbers to reaccelerate as the economy starts to improve. But in this environment, existing customers are using more, but new customers are a little bit slower to get their projects done.
I mean, what do you think AWS, I mean, it's kind of like a cash cow for Amazon, whereas Microsoft already has so much cash. I mean, do you think that Amazon's going to be able to kind of maintain its market lead in the cloud computing market?
Well, I think the next wave of cloud computing is large enterprises moving most of their processing to the cloud. And that's, you know, most of them are Microsoft customers. So Microsoft has an advantage in that process. So I would expect Microsoft to gain some share they have been gaining share against Amazon. I would expect that to continue for the next couple of years. But, you know, I think Amazon is getting most of the new companies, younger companies. They're going all in with Amazon. Many of them are born on Amazon. And so eventually they'll get the momentum back. You know, they just have a broader offering than Microsoft, which is very focused on migrating Microsoft workloads onto the cloud. So, you know, Microsoft workloads are not growing nearly as fast as workloads from, SaaS companies, for example, software as a service companies, who run mostly in AWS.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that kind of this move to the cloud has kind of been described as like a fourth industrial revolution or transformation, but so much has kind of happened, so much has kind of been sped up by coronavirus. Do you think that cloud penetration, I mean, when do you think that kind of it's that kind of transformation will be complete? Do you think that date has kind of been pulled forward?
Yeah, I mean, I know Microsoft has said that you've pulled the time frame forward by 2 years. I think the movement was happening. You know, it's kind of like e-commerce. It was happening. It just got really accelerated by this work from home and the flexibility of working from home if you're processing in the cloud as opposed to in a data center. I think companies, you know, it's just another reason to move and to move faster and to retire your old infrastructure as quickly as possible. It just makes you much more flexible and much more agile and enables you to serve your customers better. So companies that have already moved to the cloud, they're thriving in this environment, and companies that haven't are struggling. So I think that's why you're going to see this continued movement toward digital and toward cloud.
I mean, I wonder as well if we could kind of touch a bit about regulation. I mean, Amazon kind of attracted quite a lot of scrutiny at the hearing this week, especially about third-party retail sellers. And there have been reports that Amazon kind of accesses third-party data to inform their own business decisions, which Bezos admitted at the hearing that he can't guarantee never happened. I mean, how concerned are you about regulators kind of circling around Amazon, not just in the US, but also in Europe?
Well, I think, you know, Amazon's a very competitive company. And, you know, if you're running the first party business and you're trying to grow that business, you're going to be looking at the third party data. Most of that is available on Amazon, meaning that, you know, they show the best sellers, they show the most popular products, the products with the highest reviews. So you don't have to be accessing proprietary data to figure out, you know, what are the hot products, what are the prices, and what's the demand for those products. It's all available on the website, and lots of third-party sellers use that data to refine their strategies and to try to, you know, win the buy box on Amazon. So I don't think Amazon's doing anything that existing retailers don't do with their private label initiatives in grocery stores, for example. So, you know, I think that Amazon can establish tighter controls on that process and just say you have to use public information. I don't think it's going to change the idea that, you know, if you see a product like one of the areas where Amazon's number one in is phone accessories, you know, cords and chargers. I think from a consumer standpoint, you know, paying, you know, a small fraction of the price you would pay Apple or Samsung for a comparable product to connect your phone and charge your phone has been a good process overall. And, you know, there's so many sellers that when somebody sees an Amazon name on a product, they figure, oh, that's a quality product, I'll buy it, just like they would in a grocery store. They see a lot of different off-brand products versus, you know, the one that's advertised on TV, and they're trying to figure out which one to buy. Well, if Tesco has a good reputation for their private label and it's a lot cheaper, then they'll buy that. And that's basically what's happened with Amazon. So that's all part of the retail process. And, you know, I think they may have to tighten it up a little bit, but I think Amazon is trying to build a robust marketplace and trying to be a good place for third parties to sell. They make more money on third party sales than they do on their own sales. And so it's in their best interest to encourage the third party market to be healthy and thrive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from the kind of consumer standpoint, Amazon's definitely a good thing. But do you think that US regulators, do you think that then there are any substantive or actionable claims from US regulators about Amazon's place in the market and its dominance in the market?
I mean, I think Amazon's dominance in the market is a lot less than than Google, for example. You know, Amazon has, you know, 30 or 40% of e-commerce. However, you know, if you look at the fastest growing category, which is grocery, they're not even at 20% of e-commerce and grocery. So, you know, they're a minor player right now. So they're coming on really strong. And they're doing it with a value proposition, which says, we'll deliver your groceries for free, as opposed to, the other grocery vendors are charging, $15 to $25 per order to deliver your groceries. So it's a good deal for the consumer. Amazon has a broader portfolio of products, and therefore they're able to subsidize grocery and gain market share and basically become a player where they weren't a player before. So, I think that's all part of the competitive process. And I see regulators reining them in? I don't think so. I think that basically what you'll see is the other grocery retailers adopt similar programs like Amazon Prime. Walmart is already talking about Walmart Prime, for example, and I think you'll see other vendors adopt their ideas because they're working.
I mean, kind of zooming out of looking at Amazon, it's just on the wider topic of regulation. I mean, ahead of the hearing, I mean, Trump tweeted, I mean, I've got his tweet here. He tweeted, "If Congress doesn't bring fairness to big tech, which they should have done years ago, I'll do it myself with executive orders. In Washington, it's been all talk and no action for years, and the people of our country are sick and tired of it." I don't know how seriously you can take Donald Trump's tweets, but it's definitely evidence, I think, that the idea of regulating big tech is kind of getting higher in the political agenda. How do you think the upcoming election is going to impact this kind of discourse around not just Amazon, but also Alphabet, Facebook, etc.?
Well, I think these are big, powerful companies that make a lot of money. And I think it makes, it makes sense for governments to try to extract more money from them in terms of taxes or fines, as we've seen in the EU do that. So, I think that's a fact of life for these companies. With the exception of Amazon, all of these companies are not expensive stocks now. So I think part of their valuation discount to the market in many cases is a function of the fact that there is more regulation, there is more scrutiny, their taxes are going up. And that's a way of life for these big tech companies. Does that mean that their growth rate isn't going to be sustained? I don't think so. I think, for example, Facebook probably took the most heat at the hearings. But when you talk to advertisers, Facebook is a unique asset and a great way to improve your marketing efficiency. And, as Facebook said on the call last night, that they've got, tens of millions of merchants that advertise on Facebook. And have free, free sites on Facebook. They're pushing, low cost websites and shopping sites for merchants who are going online. Facebook is one of the cheapest ways to do that, the quickest ways to do that. So, their bread and butter is the 100 million merchants that are on their platform. And, I think that on the one hand, they're a difficult competitor for other social media companies, but, they're a great asset for a small business. And that's the point they're trying to make. And I think it's a valid point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you've been kind of selling down on Facebook. I mean, it's having to deal with a whole load of issues. I mean, as you said at Congress, there were kind of accusations about political bias and also concerns about how it approaches eliminating competition on top of the advertising boycott it's been experiencing over the past couple of months about hate speech that's been expressed on its platforms. I mean, do you think it still makes for a good investment case?
Well, Facebook is an expensive stock. Again, I get it. Facebook is selling at about 23 times our estimate of next year's earnings. I mean, that's, for a company that's growing throughout this period of time and should have a good recovery, and as advertising and brand advertising comes back post the crisis, I think that's, that's a very reasonable multiple, and throwing off a lot of cash and buying back more of its stock. So, to me, it's a very reasonably priced stock that has a lot of these risks and concerns in the price, in the valuation.
I mean, I wonder if we could speak about Apple as well. I know it's in your top 10 holdings. Revenues did well, I think, off the back of like sales from its cheaper iPhone, and also from devices that people can use now that they're working from home more. But I just wonder if we could speak more generally about the company, because so many of its devices are so expensive, and a lot of people are just kind of willing to stick with an iPhone that they already have rather than pay a grand for an upgrade. As I guess my question is, do you think that Apple services are kind of good enough to keep driving growth outside of its devices and its hardware?
Well, I think you're right. I think that the average replacement time for an iPhone has gone over 4 years. And the reason is exactly the reason that you said. It's, it's expensive. I think the company is really trying to address that issue and reduce the upfront cost of their devices. And, they're doing that through trade-ins. You can trade in your own phone, your old phone, and then they can sell it through their distribution system around the world at a lower price to people that are buying refurbished iPhones that are still quite functional, particularly if they refurbish the battery. So that's one avenue that Apple's doing to try to help the consumer reduce that upfront cost. The second thing they're doing is, offering Apple credit card and Apple installment plans so that the monthly payment is in some sense subsidized by Apple with a very low interest rate, and making the monthly payment less. And then, the third thing they've done is they broaden the line with the SE product, which is one of the top sellers in this last quarter. I mean, that's a low priced iPhone that's brand new with new technology. So it's not a refurbished 2 year old phone. It's a brand new one that comes in at a much lower price point. And so, I think they understand exactly the issues that you said, and they're working those issues. So I'm hopeful that we start to see that lifetime, time people own phones start to go down with the new products, and it looks like they'll have some of those new products that are 5G enabled, but yet reasonably priced.
I mean, where do you think kind of Apple services kind of sit in? How are they relevant to the investment case? What is the point of Apple Music and Apple TV? Are they there to drive growth?
Well, I think that Apple, Apple realized a few years ago that they were the center of a lot of people's universe in terms of the product they can't live without, the product that they use, tens of hours a day. But they weren't getting the benefit of that usage. In the product, the software that was being run on their platform, and they really needed to think about how to monetize that. So whether that's music or video or gaming or storage, just improving the services and the products that you can find on an iPhone. So I think that's the transformation that's resulted in the revaluation of Apple. What the benefit to Apple is that, this is more of an annuity business. It's got higher margins than the hardware business. It's more captive in the sense that, your base tends to have a natural affinity for your services. And so I think it's transformed the valuation. It's made the earnings more stable in this difficult period. And it's a higher growth business and a higher multiple business as far as I'm concerned. So I think it's all good.
I wonder if we could talk as well about kind of the relationship between the US and China. Obviously, tensions have kind of been on the rise. I was just wondering, where do you think that kind of tension is going to affect the tech industry the most?
I think you've had a almost a de facto parallel universe in several areas of technology. It's interesting to hear the Chinese complain about the U.S. thinking about regulating TikTok and banning TikTok when they ban Google and they ban Facebook and they ban all these other U.S. products in China. And it's like, oh, you can't ban TikTok. That's not fair. It's like they've only been doing it for, a decade. So I find that totally ironic. But in any case, I think there's a parallel world that's increasingly contentious, and you're going to see because China wants to replace the U.S. as the leading country in the world, and the way they're going to do that, or the way they plan to do that, is to take over many of the product areas that the U.S. is the leader in, and they plan to do it any way they can, and so. That's why you need a robust cybersecurity program. They'll steal it if they can. If you don't protect yourself, and they'll develop it if they can't steal it. So I think that, the Chinese are a force to be reckoned with in technology for the future.
Right. I mean, it's interesting that you kind of describe it as a kind of parallel universe that's happening in China. Is it almost as if, the tech industries are not, they're so distinct and so separate from each other that tensions between the US and China, that they can kind of happen without the two bubbles of tech kind of, interfering with each other without much disruption in their own little worlds?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're exactly right. That what China does on regulating media companies doesn't affect Facebook at all, and has very little impact on Amazon, and no effect on Google. So, and we can go down. Netflix isn't present in China, and so forth. So, there's the West and there's China, I really think it's increasingly a parallel universe, and that, it used to be the Western companies provided a lot of the infrastructure products for China, whether that's, you can look at it in the drug industry, or you can look at it in the semiconductor industry. And I think China's trying to just grab more of that for themselves. And they're going to be somewhat successful in that process, as they have been in other product areas.
But I suppose one area in which they do kind of cross over is manufacturing. Kind of the West kind of interacts a lot with Asia in making devices such as the iPhone. I mean, you hold TSMC, which is Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. I mean, where would that fit in if kind of relationship between the US and China kind of deteriorated even further?
Well, I think TSM is kind of on the, they're trying to play both sides. But if it comes down to making a choice, they're going to choose the U.S. And we saw that with the Huawei situation, where the U.S. said, you can't make, we're not going to approve equipment to manufacture products for Huawei. And TSM was manufacturing products for Huawei, and they basically said, we're going to stop doing that over the next 6 months. And so I think TSM is the leading processing company in the world, and 50% of their customers are from the U.S. So they're going to, they're going to vote for the side where their business is, which is on the U.S. side.
I mean, and just finally, I know that kind of, I think UK investors kind of might gravitate towards FANG stocks and Microsoft, probably mainly because they grab the headlines the most over here. But the US tech sector is so huge. I mean, it's a big question, but I mean, what are the companies that you really like outside of the FANGs?
Well, I think we've got a large part of our portfolio in the semiconductor industry, and we have a large part of our portfolio in the cloud computing area outside of the FANGs. So that would be, software companies that are born in the cloud or enable companies to develop products in the cloud. And I think the world is basically changing their infrastructure from on-premise to cloud, and that's a 10-year journey. We're a couple of years into that journey, and it's only going to continue. And I think the companies that that run the infrastructure of the future are the companies that are going to be increasingly valuable as they've shown in this crisis. They have annuity-type businesses that companies can't do without. And so I think the valuation of those companies and the growth of those companies can continue to grow.
Great. Well, I think that's kind of reached our time. But yeah, thanks for the conversation. It's great to talk to you. Thanks very much for coming on.
Okay. Well, thank you for your effort.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.